So like I'm gonna be looking at Clifford tensor powers. So tensor powers of Clifford matrices, and like the joke is like, sure, why not, right? Okay. So first, like, have you guys like, have you guys seen like servile duality in the past? Okay. So I'll just like do a recap like from like my point of view of servile duality to introduce like the Clifford side. Hi. So okay. Okay. So what's the point in servile duality? So like we start out in a Hilbert space, let's say C to the D to the tensor T. And what we will be looking at is a representation of the unitary group here, of the unitary group on CD. And I will be acting, like the representation will be the following. Take like a matrix in like U of CD and map it to this matrix tensored with itself T times. Hey. Okay, so that's the representation we start out from in servile duality, and like the question we ask is, okay, like what commutes with this representation? And the first thing to notice is that, okay, obviously like permuting tensor factors commutes with it, because just like I'm acting with the same thing in every tensor factor, and the statement of servile duality is that's enough. So like the commutant of this representation, let's say rho is the representation. The commutant of rho is equal to linear combinations of elements of the permutation group on T elements just by permuting the tensor factors. Okay, so that's like commutant. Okay. Like a second point of view on servile duality is to consider, okay, like now I have two groups that seem like dual to each other, so I'm gonna take the representation of the Cartesian product of the two. So each one of them is acting on Hilbert space. The two actions commute. So like the two actions are isomorphic to a representation of this group here. Okay. So as a representation of this group, how does Hilbert space decompose? And then okay, so like the, in general, like a like an E-rep of this group will look something like, let's say like alpha tensor beta, where like alpha is an E-rep of U of the unitary group, and beta is a unitary of the permutation group, and then in general. Like a joint representation, not necessarily an E-rep, will look something like this. Okay, so it will be just like a, like any representation of this group will be as a direct sum of E-reps of that group. Each one of these E-reps will be like some alpha I tensor beta j, where like alpha I is an E-rep of the unitary group, and beta j is an E-rep of the permutation group. And there will be some like degeneracy spaces in general. And the statement of servile duality is a statement about this matrix here. So this matrix here is it's such that like for every j there is at most one I for which kij is not equal to zero. And whenever, and like kij, okay, like maybe this is not equal to, it's like a condition on, and like kij not equal to zero implies that it's equal to one. So basically, if we like display this as like an array, this will be basically like a rectangular array because there's a different number of ereps of the unitary and the symmetric group. There will be a square part though, where like we have like a permutation matrix. And then it will be zero. So this will be basically K. So it depends on like you know, like which side is longer will depend on like what, yeah, like so let's see. Yeah, it doesn't really matter. The important thing is that like because K, it's like in each row it's like non-zero in at most one place, and when it's non-zero, it's like equal to one. It sets up like a correspondence between these ERFs and those ERFs. So basically it says to each one of these ERFs of the symmetric group appearing here, there's at most one ERF corresponding to the unitary group. So we could like write this as like alpha being a function of this beta j. Yep.
So when you say like for anyone there's at least at most one that corresponds to it, what does this correspondence mean? Like
it's just that let me like write the next equation. I think it will answer your question. Okay.
One more question before. Yeah. Like, what is this c to the k? Like, I'm a bit having trouble understanding the direct Simon decomposition.
Okay. So, maybe I should be more like precise. So we have like a representation of the unitary group acting on Hilbert space, and we also have like a representation of the symmetric group acting there. And these two together commute. So I mean, like I can perform like a joint representation of the Cartesian product of these two groups. So it's just kind of like the two things acting at the same time. I can like act with local unitaries and permute things. And I don't know, like let's call this like other representation like tau, like a rep of this group. And now what I'm finding is like I'm decomposing tau into ERIPs. So what I'm saying is tau is like isomorphic as an ERIP to something like this, just in general. So and like the way it's isomorphic, so like tau will map like a pair, like a unitary and a permutation to something that like acts on Hilbert space, and like what it will do is like mapping it to so like the image of will be like this, and this would be in general like the like degeneracy spaces. So just that there's like you know like for every pair of alpha, yeah. But what I'm saying is that all of these degeneracy spaces are trivial. So yeah, and it's kind of so like this second thing that these degeneracy spaces are like all trivial, is kind of direct to see that. If there was anything, if there was like any k that was like larger than one here, there would be like matrices that commute with both like the symmetric group and the so there would be like matrices that are not linear combinations of the permutation group that also commute with the unitary action. So that and like this is like the more technical. So I wouldn't be able to like prove it right here right now, but this is kind of like the statement that that gives you the correspondence. So basically,
so the k's are actually the dimensions of the
degeneracy
spaces.
Yep. So. So now, the k's being equal to zero. Okay. What do I want to do? Like, what I want to do is to write this representation in this way. So to each irrep of the permutation group, there corresponds like at most one irrep of the unitary group. So I can write it as a function of the, you know, like the irrep of the unitary group as a function of the irrep of the symplectic group. And there's no degeneracy spaces. So like another way of stating this is just like writing this equation.
Symmetric group, right? Not the symplectic.
Yeah, symmetrics. Yeah, sorry. It's like the, yep, I'm already used to talking about symplectic all day. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of like the essence of Chervalle duality. So just to.
Important part is it's 1-to-1, which like kind of surprising.
Yes. So it's 1-to-1 from like the irreps of the symmetric group to the irreps that appear, like to the irreps of the unitary group that appear in the tth tensor power. But yes, it's 1-to-1.
What is 1-to-1 again? Like the pairs are unitary.
Yes. The pairs are so like I can write the functions of the unitary group that appear the irreps of the unitary group that appear in this representation as a function of a single irrep of the symmetric group.
There's some kind of bit missing maybe for me. So you say that for each j there's at most one I, but you don't say there exists an I. So like.
Wait. Did I write it like the wrong way around?
But each J, there is a one.
That's just saying that there might be some irreps that don't appear, symmetric groups that don't appear in a particular decomposition.
Yes. The actual statement. Sorry. Like it was the other way around. So there are some irreps of the unitary group that don't appear. Don't necessarily appear. But whenever they appear, they're associated to a single irrep of the symmetric group.
But there's presumably also some irreps of the symmetric group that don't appear.
No. All of them appear. The reason for all of them appearing is that
I mean, you're just given some arbitrary irrep tau, right, or an arbitrary representation tau.
Yes, but now the like okay, so this was for an arbitrary yes. Okay, so like this was for an arbitrary irrep, and now I'm making a representation, and now I'm okay. So like this was an arbitrary representation, and now when I like put tau in this way, I also get a statement that like all like irreps of the symmetric group appear there.
There's a symmetric group on T elements, acting on T elements.
Yeah. It's basically a free action. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'm gonna like be a little bit nonlinear here. The way we constructed this kind of correspondence was this: like we had like two small groups embedded into a larger group. And they were basically each other's commutant within that larger group. And then we said something about like how this joint representation decomposes. And we're gonna do something similar with the Clifford group. This is why I wanted to like draw this picture. Okay, so I'm gonna like erase some stuff. Okay. Okay. So now we kind of like, you know, like throw away the unitary group for now and like go to Clifford land. So first I'm gonna like do a basic recap of like the Clifford group Because I don't know, like I don't know how how well everybody is kind of versed with it. So okay, so the starting point is okay. So the starting point is Hilbert space. So our Hilbert space will look like this. So we will have like some local system, some qubit, and this will like D will be an odd prime. Like the theory can be generalized to like to D being like an odd prime power, which is a little bit like more possibilities, but like for like it's just easier to explain if it's like just an odd prime. Okay.
But you're excluding qubits.
Not yet. So we're working on the result for qubits, but like it's not done yet. So
this talk will say it about
qubits. Yeah. Okay. So this will be like when we take tensor powers, but actually for now, let me just introduce the Clifford group itself, which is just like acting on n qubits. Okay. So I define like two operators, like X and Z, which will be basically like generalizations of Pauli matrices that act on CD. And the way they act is, okay, like the X acts by translations on the computational basis, plus one mod D. And the Z one puts a phase. Okay. Like this type of phase, it's normally like useful to write it as like or just kind of like it's like a nice notation to put like omega to be like some like the dth root of unity and then just like raise it to things that are in like ZD. Okay. Okay, so like these two acting on okay, so like they will be able to act on any of these like qubits. They generate a group, and it's like let's just call it the Pauli group. So it's just like the group generated by all like Zs and Xs acting on any qubit. Okay. And this is all to define the Clifford group, which is just like the set of unitaries that like preserve the Pauli group. So basically that like send Paulis to Paulis. So okay. So that's the group we're working with. It's like a subgroup of the unitary group. Yes.
No, I was just wondering if it has to be collective, I guess.
Okay, like this is an equality of sets.
Yeah, but I was wondering if you could have subset, but you don't get subset if it's unitary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's not sub. People normally write it as subset, but like it's kind of wasteful because you never go to the sub part. okay, yeah. Let's see, I'm gonna write something down, like a fact down about Clifford's, and you tell me how comfortable you are, because then I spend more or less time like introducing this fact. So like for any Clifford matrix okay, so like two facts actually. The first fact, there's a peculiar symplectic group inside of the Clifford group. So it has like a subgroup that is like symplectic group, and not only that, but like it's quite prominent. So like for all u in the Clifford group, there exists like a symplectic matrix and the Pauli, let's say like I don't know, P in P symplectic matrix in the symplectic group, such that basically like u is equal to, let's see. So mu of s is just like the Clifford matrix corresponding to that symplectic matrix because I kind of like claimed in the first part that there's a subgroup isomorphic to it. And then P is just like the Pauli matrix. Is anybody like uncomfortable with like, I can also like just go through it. It's just like, if I introduce like phase space, it takes a little bit more time than. Okay, so I'll go on with that. Okay, so that's one fact. Another fact that will be useful is that I can like associate Paulis with like vectors in this phase space. The way I do it, like this is like, this will be like as usual, like the product of like some like position space and some momentum space, and then position space will basically tell you how the x operators act, and momentum space will tell you how the like where the z operators act, and to which powers and stuff. Okay, so like the way I'll write this down is just like p being a function of v, and like I'm like leaving out the phase because it won't like really play a role. Okay. So that, okay.
So the point one, normally I think of this symplegic group as being a quotient of a perfect group. You're saying this actually a subgroup as well.
Yes.
Is that something that's not true for qubits?
Yeah, that's not true for qubits. Yeah. Yep. Mu of s. Okay, so like I claimed that there's like a subgroup of the Clifford group, which is like the symplectic group, and the way I write like elements of this subgroup will be like mu of s for like s in the symplectic group, so it will just be like a representation of the symplectic group that is like living inside of the Clifford group. Yeah. Okay. So. Okay. So now what I want to look at is at representations. Okay, so like now we actually go to tensor power. Okay. So I want to look at this representation, which I mean like using the previous step will look like this, like the previous like convenient facts. So basically, like I will take like any symplectic matrix, any element of phase space, and then just tensor it. Yep, to the T. Okay. So I told you that like part of the okay. So like that's the basic setup. But now I want to put this like in a form like similar to the Schur-Weil case, where we embed two things into like a larger group, and like they're each other's commutant, and then kind of we can like start talking about representations from there. Okay, so the way I'm gonna embed them is this. What is the like the global Hilbert space will now be Zd to the tensor n to the tensor T. So like okay, so like first of all, I'm gonna like give a picture of what like the computational basis looks like, and from there I'm gonna like read out what's like the position space, and then like read out what's like phase space. So basically like the computational basis will be given by an n by t matrix with elements in Ft. So like each element will be like an element of Z mod t. Okay, so that's basically my position space. So my position space is equal to the space of matrices over Zd. And I'm gonna rewrite this in a convenient way. So like I'm gonna write it like this. This all seems like really super, like I'm just like introducing new notation, but like it will pay off like in a minute. okay, and now I can like also read off what phase space is. So, okay, like phase space is just isomorphic to two copies of position space, basically, or like position space and like its dual, but like it won't matter for this talk. And again, I'm gonna do this like stupid trick of like factorizing the T vector space. Okay. Now, if okay. So if I now compute like what Pauli's look like in this okay, like so like Pauli's will be again like acting in any like the global Pauli's that I'm constructing will act on any like qudit in this like 2D array of qudits. Okay. And let's see. Okay. So this is the way I'm gonna write things. I'm gonna represent Hilbert space in this way. So each dot corresponds to one qudit, and yeah, like there will be like I don't know like t dots vertically and n dots horizontally, and now any Pauli matrix will be okay like a just a tensor product of Pauli matrices acting here and here and here and here. Okay, so but like I'm gonna block these together for later purposes because just gonna be natural to think of like if I'm gonna take like tensor powers of t Pauli's acting on like in general like in this way, so like a general Pauli matrix can be written as, and I'm gonna use this like vertical notation. So like I don't know, P of V1 tensor P of V2 tensor P of Vt, where I just kind of P of V1 is just like the Pauli acting on the first. Okay, so now. So I'm gonna like compute like basically the commutation relations between Pauli's. So or actually maybe I just like take the yeah. Okay, so I think I'm maybe being a little bit too nonlinear, but okay, I want to write this because all of the local factors basically like commute up to a phase. I want to write this as okay, like a phase, blah blah blah. I mean like something like a phase, and then like the p of u's on the left side and the p of v's. Right side, and I want to ask what this phase is. Basically, like how much do they not commute? And okay, so I didn't introduce this, but like what I'm gonna use is that like in each of these factors. Let me just Okay, this I didn't introduce. So basically, like, there's a, like, the reason the symplectic group enters all of this is that, like, the commutation relations between Paulis are basically, like, indexed by, like, this symplectic product, which I'm just gonna call, call it with square brackets. So basically, like, the phase that you pay by, like, switching two Paulis around is basically, like, yeah, just, like, take the x part of the first Pauli times the, like, the z part of the second Pauli minus the inverse thing. Okay. And
what's the x part of the Pauli?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So when I said that you can have a you can write a correspondence between, like, points in phase space and Paulis, the way, like, one can do this by the following mapping, just, like, have, like, separate phase space into, like, two, like, one position and one momentum space. The position space will tell you how the x part acts. So basically, like, wherever it's non-zero, there's, like, an x acting, and depending on what, like, it will be, like, the power of this x acting there. And then, like, a z acting there. So that's, like, the x part is this, yeah. Okay. So in this was all to, like, talk about this global phase, but this global phase will just be, like, the sum of all of these phases, just because of all, each of them will, yeah. So in, like, this cloud thingy that I drew here is actually equal to, okay. So, and this I'm gonna call, like, the, like, I don't know. I'm gonna call this, like, this is a sum of a bunch of local symplectic products, and then I'm gonna call it, like, the global symplectic product between the array, like, of U's and the array of B's. Okay. So, I now have my, I constructed the global group that I wanted to embed the two things, one of which was going to be the Clifford tensor powers. And the global group will be the global Clifford group. So basically, like, I don't know, like, so this will be basically the symplectic group of the big space. Times the global Pauli group. And from, like, this form of the symplectic product, like, I can read it off what it means here. So, like, the symplectic product corresponding to this group will be just equal to, like, okay, it's like this vector space is the tensor product of two vector spaces, so I can, like, define the product on product vectors. So let's see. D is a bad letter here. So all of this was to say that like this like global symplectic group has like this as a phase space, and like this phase space, like the like symplectic product that you get there from like Pauli commutation relations is just basically like the product of the old symplectic product that you had times like a dot product on the second space. Okay. So now, sorry, I'm gonna take my sweater off because I'm getting a little bit like warm. Okay. Okay, so I'm gonna erase some more stuff, or maybe come back here. Okay. So within that like global Clifford group, I want to see how like local, like I don't know, local Cliffords to the tensor T act, or like how do they look like? So local Paulis will correspond to like vectors in phase space that look in this way. So basically, this is like the vector with like t ones. So I don't know. Okay, yeah, that's just saying that like each one of the dimensions in this vector space, I can assign it to like a single like local system. Okay, so that's how Paulis look like. Local Paulis to the tensor T will be equal to like global Paulis evaluated at this type of vectors. And what about like local symplectics? Well, local symplectics are acting here, so they will be matrices of the form. So like I don't know. Symplectic will be of the form. Acting on okay. So is everybody like there with that equation? Okay. So now I want to look at what's the commutant of this thing. So I'm gonna erase this part. Okay. So okay, let's first start like with symplectics, which is kind of like the more interesting case. And yeah, like I'll get to the rest soon. So
can I ask a quick question?
Yep.
So P local, it acts on C D tensor N.
Yep.
And does it act as a tensor product on C D tensor N, or could it be a lost tensor product on C D tensor N?
No, it acts as a tensor product in yep. Okay, so if I have a matrix that commutes with all like local symplectics of like in this space, let's write like a matrix, I don't know, like M prime in like the like an invertible matrix in acting on this vector space. And then I'm gonna actually, okay, I'm gonna like already start just from like a symplectic group, which is like what I want. Okay, so in general, like this will be like just like some sum of like, I don't know, maybe, G is a bad name. AIBI. So this will, like, just because it's like a matrix acting on like this tensor product vector space, it will be like of this form. It will just be like some sum of like product matrices. And the important part is that like if it acted non-trivially in any of these AIs, then it would be like it would not commute with all the symplectic group, because I mean like just the symplectic group itself is like irreducible when acting on its own vector space. So these AIs have to all be equal to one. Okay. Also, to be symplectic, it should, okay. So like, what do I say first? Like, second, I'm gonna like actually just consider like tensor product matrices, and then the other ones I just construct them out of linear combinations of tensor product matrices, so I can just like forget about this sum here. And like the last thing I wanted to say is that like, okay, so like for this matrix to be like an element of the symplectic group, it should preserve the symplectic form. Okay, here it acts as the identity, so it like obviously preserves it. But here it should also preserve that like dot product to be able to preserve the like the global symplectic form. So in fact, like the like M will be of the form identity times B, where like B is an element of like basically an orthogonal group in T dimensions.
Yeah. It's essentially just because you said M is an ERF. And so just short lemma that it has to be like,
yeah.
Or like times a constant.
Yeah. And I just like move the constant to the other side. Yep. Okay. So okay, like now on the symplectic side, it's kind of becoming clear, and I'll like argue in a minute why like we actually only needed the symplectic side like all along. I'll just make it clear in a moment. But for now, I want to say we have these two groups. Let's see. So we have these two groups acting on phase space. They commute, and like a nice, and like they are both like subgroups of the global symplectic group. And now, kind of like the nice theorem is that they are actually each other's commutant within the large symplectic group. So basically here, we already have like the structure that we are looking for, like this type of structure. Okay, so now we're gonna like try to like make the most out of that. I have 20 more minutes. It's like I think it's enough. Okay, so that.
The clock is a little bit late.
Ah, okay.
And there's a reservation at
11,
so we need to be like
15
minutes.
Okay, cool. Okay. The important thing is this. So I told you that each dimension here roughly corresponds to one qubit. Like you can make it correspond to one qubit. So now I'm gonna like take one of these dimensions to be this direction in like that vector space, and I'm gonna declare that to be the first qubit. And then all the others are gonna be like orthogonal to this with respect to the dot product, like the dot product in like this vector space. So the important thing is that like when I so like this will be an isomorphism of representation. So this will map like Pauli's represented in this way to Pauli's represented in another way. In particular, all of these Paulis will be acting along this direction. So they will be all concentrated on the first qubit. So what I'm saying is that is isomorphic to well, something that like has Paulis, like has the Pauli group on the first qubit, in the first qubit, and then tensor like something that is only symplectic, like. Just because I defined like the first qubit instead of being like, I don't know, like before the first qubit corresponded to this vector, and now it's gonna correspond to this vector. This has only one catch. This only works when T is not a multiple of D. Because if it was, this vector would have zero norm, and like things would like break down basically. Because this vector has like one, like non-zero norm. Oh,
sorry. So that vector of ones, is it d-dimensional? Is it like the t vector, the t entries there? Was it just a d-dimensional qubit vector?
Like this. Ah, no. This is like. Yeah. It's d. Yeah. Okay. And okay, so like this mapping can be made precise, and basically like the message is that this mapping does not do anything to the local symplectics, because I just like the local symplectics somehow only acted on this part, and here they acted as the identity. And if I now kind of like change the basis of what like qubit means in qubits, like or like what like local systems mean in this space, they kind of like don't care. Like that's the intuition behind it. So basically, like the precise statement is this. So basically, I have the full Clifford group on the first qubit, and only symplectics on the first like of the T subsystems, yeah, and on the first column, on the first row, sorry, and then like only symplectics acting on the other rows with this like isomorphism.
This is the Clifford group of the whole thing is equal to this.
That
you're saying?
No, I'm saying the local Clifford group to the tensor T.
That's the local Clifford group, basically.
Yep.
Is equal
to that. Yep. So it's not like just like it's not like starting out that way, but like. If one, okay, so like the mechanism behind like that like isomorphism is that like in general if I don't know, like if you start with like a phase space V, which is like a direct sum of two phase spaces, then the representation of the symplectic group corresponding to that symplectic group is actually equal to like the tensor product of the two. of the two local ones. And now like my V1 will be the span of this vector, and the V2 will be the orthocomplement of that thing. So basically like the symplectic group will just like separate over that like over that cut. But the Pauli group will feel a difference, like because basically all Paulis are of this form and none of them are in the orthocomplement, so then they'll be all concentrated. Like okay, and that's neat because now the Pauli like this representation will map like a PU mu of S in the local Clifford group will get mapped to PU mu of S tensor mu of S to the T minus one. Okay, so. So now I range, like now let's, I'll take a subgroup of this thing, which is just setting S to identity, and like I let U range over the whole Pauli group. And I see that like already this subgroup is like acting irreducibly in the first tensor factor. So if I like look at the commutant of this thing, it will always, or like in particular, like projectors onto sub-representations, they will always have the form like identity tensor, some like projector that commutes with this other part. So now it's enough to just look at, sorry, I missed that tensor part there. So it's enough to look at like the representation theory of this like symplectic subgroup to like talk about the representation theory of the Clifford group. Okay, so. In the last like few minutes, I'll just kind of like blurt out the final result basically. So for the symplectic group, we like I told you about this correspondence. So now, like if we just try to like decompose the representation, so like, yeah, I'm not gonna need this. What was I saying? So if so now, okay, let me just like change notation. Like I'm just gonna like relabel t minus one as t because it's. I should have started with t plus one, but this would like be yeah. Okay, so let me just relabel that to that. Okay, so like in our scenario, like the like from like I don't know like if we start like from Schurweil and go to us, like the equivalent of the symmetric group will be basically the orthogonal group, and the equivalent of the local unitary group, let's see, will be the local Clifford group. Okay, so now let's try to just like decompose the like the representation in terms of the irreps of O. Again, like bless you, all the irreps of O will like also appear in this representation by the same mechanism, because basically like O is acting freely, so there will be like a regular representation hidden inside of this like big representation. So let's like decompose Hilbert space, which I'm just gonna call H because it's like I don't want to like right, like to the tensor, blah blah blah, all the time. So I'm gonna again decompose it in terms of irreps of the orthogonal group, and I'm gonna have like some factors, and I'm gonna have some function of. So like this will be a representation of the symplectic group. In the Schurweil case, this was an irrep. If we would like do this whole formalism for the continuous symplectic group and the continuous orthogonal group, this would also be an irrep. But the reason I'm here talking is that like in the finite field case, like this is not an irrep. This is like a reducible representation. And then it's kind of like, okay, so like what what can we learn? Like, how can we further decompose? Like, can we find some other like correspondence on finer correspondence? Okay. So.
You still have 4 minutes.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Okay. So before us, like, okay. So, like a year ago or 2 years ago, two mathematicians proved that if you restrict, so like there's like some like filtering of representations of the symplectic group, which they call like tensor rank, which is different from like the actual like tensor rank that like we're used to with like tensors. It has to do with, I told you that like the like computational basis will be like basically like T by N matrices. So let's say that one of these matrices is F. Basically what they look at is the rank of this F, and for any EREP, they look at like the maximum, like the maximal rank of any F that is supported in that EREP. So some EREPs will only contain vectors that have components along like lower rank computational basis states, essentially. And like, okay, so if okay, so like within all EREPs, the maximal rank of this thing will be actually like the minimal of these two numbers. In this case, we're normally dealing with like t smaller than n, so I'm gonna like take like the maximal rank to be t. And now what they say is, within each one of these theta of taus, there's a unique EREP with rank equals to t, which they call like N of tau. So basically, what they said is, okay, this is equal to the sum over EREPs of the orthogonal group to the tensor t of t. So basically, they have Schur-Weil duality on the maximal rank part and some lower rank that they didn't understand, and that's where we climbed in. So it turns out that if these lower rank representations turn out to be like some like CSS codes of like some special form, and they turn there's like an onion like effect where like these lower rank representations look like the full like tensor power representation for some lower t. So what we will have is like some recursive thing. So like basically, okay, so like t in ear of ot, t tensor eta of tau, then plus t in EREPs, it goes down in steps of two for reasons I don't really have time right now, but so. And this will have like a global degeneracy, which is like some number basically. Like. So basically what we'll have is basically like at each level of rank, we have like an equivalent like Schur-Weil duality up to some global degeneracy, which will come from the fact that there's, yeah, like the rank will correspond to dimension of these codes, and there's like many equivalent codes of the same dimension. So that's kind of like the whole thing. So yeah, thanks so much for listening.